Well, this is the hour we call Conversations with Cheryl. We're going to take your phone calls, stories, tips, whatever you got. We'll get to you when we come back. And welcome back. George Norrie with you, along with our investigative reporter, Cheryl Jones, and your phone calls this hour, Conversations with Cheryl. Cheryl, what stories do you really love to dig into?
Anything mysterious and unknown. And, of course, I really like and love all of the UFO and the space-related stories. I also love the natural healings and the medical aspect of alternative healing stories. I like almost anything that has an edge and is something new and beneficial and something that is generally unknown but that I feel people need to know.
If you were on CNN these days, would you be shaking your head at their coverage?
I'm not on CNN these days, and I'm already shaking my head. Yes, it's not the CNN I was involved in, that's for sure. It's a totally different world.
It's become advocacy journalism. It's not news anymore.
No, it seems to be everyone has a political agenda. I literally cannot comprehend what I'm seeing, to be honest with you. I think I have graduated from the 12-step recovery program from mainstream news, to be honest.
Yeah, they've sure changed from our days, haven't they?
They sure have. I think mainstream news would do well from time to time to acknowledge what alternative media has done over the years, because I've said for years that alternative media, in many cases, I believe, breaks a story years later when it finally becomes so blatantly obvious it can no longer be ignored. It's picked up by mainstream news without credit. At that point, it's generally treated as if they are breaking a story that we've known all along for years, those of us who have followed other independent news sources.
Did you hear the story with Nick Pope? You know Nick Pope well.
Yes, of course.
What a great story about the Pentagon releasing officially the videos of those objects, whatever they were chasing.
Interesting. What a way to milk a story, right? I mean, how many times can you release the same thing over and over? But, hey, it worked.
If this story could have been released with a non-coronavirus situation, it would have gotten widespread coverage.
Oh, absolutely. But, again, it's just a reimbursement, a reissuance of the previous videos that had been released. And in this particular arena with the videos of the UFOs or the UAPs, which I call unidentified aerial apologies, these have been going on for years. And it's interesting to me how when it makes mainstream news, or even a step further, when our government acknowledges it, as they have, that suddenly it's like it never happened before, and it's breaking news.
Mm-hmm.
When we've had pilot reports for, let's just go back to 1947 with Kenneth Arnold.
Absolutely.
So, but it is amazing, and it's wonderful that it's being acknowledged at this level, because so many people only get mainstream news for their news input, unfortunately. So that's, it is new to a lot of people.
Can you believe when we get you back in May, we'll be into summer already?
Where does the time go?
My gosh, it's crazy.
Hopefully we'll all be out of lockdown.
Well, I think we're going to have to, or we're going to lose this country.
I don't think that this is helping us at this point. My personal opinion, of course.
My opinion at this point is open up the country in total. Uh-huh. If you're old and sickly, stay home. Lock down yourself.
So much of this has been common sense. Number one, if you're sick or you have a compromised immune system, most people are smart enough or don't even feel like getting out, especially older people. I feel that the senior citizens and the older people are kind of getting the short end of the stick here, because they're getting an image that they don't deserve. They deserve to live as much as everybody else.
Absolutely.
But But I know so many older people, and you talk about your mother. My parents were the same way in their 90s. They could, you know, run rings around someone 20 or 30 years their junior. And this whole age labeling thing, I think could use some revision.
You know, well, my mother's philosophy is she's on this planet to live, and
exactly.
And that's what she's going to do.
Exactly. I really, 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 really feel very strongly about that.
And the fact is also, Cheryl, that people are dying under a lockdown. Now, what does that tell you?
There are more ways than one, more ways than a virus, to have your life ruined or to die. So I think it's time to get out and... And there are so many things that are happening at the grassroots levels around the country where people are beginning to protest and show their feelings about this that still don't make the mainstream news like they should. You can't depend on mainstream news to find out all you need to know.
How about on one of your future shows, try to get a hold of an interview with Anthony Fauci, the infectious disease guy who's with President Trump on those what were daily news conferences, and ask him who funded the Wuhan laboratory, and ask him if he knows of anybody who has patents for the coronavirus. I mean, I've never heard of that before. That just makes no sense.
Apparently, from one of the reports that I've heard, that anyone who works for the CDC on a patent is entitled to own a piece of it. Now, you know, you really get down into the weeds and you have to get down in there and research and verify things. But I really have heard a lot of this for a long time. And there's so much involved that we don't know. And the mandatory aspect of it goes way back to the UN, George, when the decade that we're in now and ending from 2011 to 2020 was mandated to be the decade of vaccines. And you know what the word mandate means.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also, you know, in my little view, very serious because we all don't have the same immune systems. And we all, and especially if you're immune compromised, not everybody can handle the same thing. People have allergies. You know, there isn't a one-size-fits-all, so that's a real concern. And I also, like so many, have concerns over conflicts of interest of people who might profit from the advancement of
selling
vaccines. The immunity of the big pharma is a concern too, because that means, and many people don't realize that. That if you take a vaccine or have someone in your family, your children or whatever, have a vaccine, you're responsible for whatever may happen, what liability may happen there. And the pharmaceutical industries do have immunity against that. And that's a concern because, you know, unlimited, it's mandatory and there's no liability, I think that's a recipe for disaster, in my opinion.
Would you get the vaccine, a new vaccine, if they develop one?
Not voluntarily.
I don't even take the flu vaccine.
I don't either. I haven't had it in years.
I do not tell people not to get the vaccine. I think it's their decision, not mine. They don't need my opinion about that. But I simply tell them what I do.
That's exactly right. I'm really concerned, George, about the ability of people to get the information, get total information from both sides of the fence so they can make their own decision. And right now, one of my main concerns is the censorship that is going on about all of the natural information and the information from the other side, which, you know, wants to pursue the safety aspect. And I think that's imperative. I'm really concerned about all of the censorship that's going on across the board in all social media.
Absolutely. Let's go to the phones. David in Sarasota, Florida, will get us started. Hey, Dave, go ahead.
Good morning, George. Good morning. This is a fantastic show. And, George, you're my hero. You are my voice of reason.
Thank you, David.
I work every night. I work night shifts, and I listen to you every single night religiously, and it is fantastic.
Well, we're here for you.
tonight. I run nighttime fishing charters here in Sarasota and Venice, and tonight we were out running a charter and had some people on the boat, and all of a sudden the young lady on the boat, she looks up and she goes, "Oh my God, what is that?" And it was the string of 60 satellites.
You know what what those are? Elon Musk satellites that he has launched. And they, you're right. It's a string of satellites. But if you don't know what it is, you think you're looking at the greatest UFO discovery ever.
Looks like pearls. Looks like a string of pearls.
Yeah.
And what flipped those out, I knew what they were because I had heard about them through your show. But I didn't say anything at first. I just watched the reaction. Three on the boat, and they were like, "What is going on? What is that? What is that?" But the strangest thing happened is that these little pearl-looking, two of them were right next to each other, and suddenly they merged into one. I'm like, how does it do that?
That'll happen when one is in front of the other and the other's behind it, but it looks like they're together, like they mesh together.
Yeah, they mesh together, but what are they for, George?
He's testing all kinds of things. Primarily for communication purposes, but who knows what's going on. And I think he's going to send up another 46 more.
I just wonder if they have something to do with this horrible 5G.
And by the way, what's going on down there in Sarasota with the lockdown?
Well, they're relaxing all the boat ramps a little bit. They're starting to let people go back to the beach, but you cannot sunbathe. You can walk the beach. You can go swimming. You have to do social distancing, and they've created a situation where it's very hard to park. There's nowhere to park, but you can get dropped off to get exercise, but you can't sunbathe.
Uh-huh.
They're opening the boat ramps. They're talking about starting to open some restaurants with a limited amount of seating. It's starting to get a little feel to get back to normal. I think we got to get back to normal, open this country, and get things going again. I think this whole thing was maybe an attack on our economy or what it was. I just feel like there's something more to this, and I'm not happy with the CDC.
No, me either. Me either. Thanks, David. Appreciate your call indeed. But, yeah, if you're looking at a string of satellites up in the air, it's Elon Musk's project, and it's amazing to be able to launch that many and have them all work, Cheryl.
It is. Remember my interview last month with Jan Harzan, the executive director of MUFON, talked about that and talked about how that was causing so many false
UFO reports
of UFOs.
It must be driving Peter Davenport nuts. I'll ask him about that tomorrow.
I'm sure it's keeping him pretty busy.
It's crazy
stuff. I've gotten emails on that with people, though, who say that they've seen something similar, but they indicate that they're moving in ways that they don't think that Elon Musk's Starlink could, and that they really believe that what they've seen are really something else other than that.
We have next John in McLean, Virginia. Welcome to the program. Hi, John. Good to have you with us.
Miss Jones, may I call you Cheryl?
You may, absolutely.
Cheryl, I remember watching you back in the days on CNN when it was actually a real news service.
That was a while ago, yes.
It was an honor.
It was a different time.
I don't even recognize CNN anymore, personally. But I wanted to ask you and first tell you that I want to give you my sympathies for the loss of your colleague, Bobby Batista.
Thank you. She was really a wonderful person.
Do you mind sharing a story about her?
Well, let me see.
And while you ponder that, Cheryl, a question. Did you know Ted Turner to the point where you could do an interview with him?
Possibly so. It might take a while to get to him, but that's a possibility.
Is he active with anything anymore?
I don't think he's all that active, and I'm not sure of his health at this point, but I could find out.
Bobby Batista, of course, died at the age of 67, about a month ago, wasn't it?
Yes, a little more than that. She was in Iowa. And, just had a situation that she wasn't able to overcome. But
former CNN anchor. Did you work during the same time period she was there?
during the same time period, yes, she worked at CNN Headlines, and I worked upstairs at CNN. So there's kind of two separate entities there, but in the same building, and some of us swapped back and forth. I did some things for Headlines as well. But she was on the lower level, and I was on the upper level, and so that was that. But he wanted a little story. Bobby was such a beautiful person and so talented, but she, you know, her eyes were just a little very compelling, and some people would kind of get fixated on her eyes.
Yeah, she came out of Raleigh, North Carolina, didn't she?
I think she did, and then she was in Iowa, you know, at the end of her life. But
she covered the Challenger explosion, and she was on the air, I think, when Reagan got shot and wounded.
Right.
So there's a lot of history there. It's
a lot of history.
Those, I guess, the stories of anchor people would be, where were they during these incredible events? I'll always remember Walter Cronkite when John F. Kennedy got killed.
Yes. That was an amazing time, and you can still find those videos. Some of them are still there. Some are censored that have some other information on there. There are some of his other speeches. But, yeah, he was one of a kind, and he certainly set the journalistic bar very high.
Yeah, he sure did. He sure did. And you worked with my buddy Don Harrison, didn't you?
I did. Don was very, very nice as well. There were a lot of nice people, really good people, whom I worked with there, and some of them are gone now. But, you know, I worked with Burt Reinhardt. He was the one who hired me. Then there was Ed Turner, no relation to Ted Turner. And it was just a different time. But I saw the transition starting, at the end of my time there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you could tell something was afoot, and then the rest is history with what's happened over the years.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And Don, of course, was a one-legged skier in addition to his anchor duties.
He sure didn't let that stop him, did he?
Oh, he did not. It was truly incredible, folks. If you ever picture a guy with one leg on one ski going down a slope. And he was good. He didn't fall. I mean, I've got two legs and I'd fall. He was one of a kind. I worked with him in Minneapolis back in 1978-79 and then came to St. Louis. And he moved on to CNN. And I was so happy for him because he was just a good, solid news guy. You know, he wasn't one of these happy talk anchor people or anything that local stations were pushing during that era when we were there. He was just a straight news guy, and he excelled at CNN for years.
Oh, he did. I don't know how many years he was there, but he was there a long, long time.
Yeah, he sure was. Cheryl, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and take final phone calls with you. Conversations with Cheryl. Don't forget to go to her website, send her an email, give her some story tips and ideas as well. And the website is her name, Cheryl Jones, but we've got it linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. And we'll be back in a moment with Cheryl Jones and final phone calls with her. On our next Coast to Coast program, Steve Stockton joins me to talk about strange things in the woods. I'm looking forward to that, followed by those Friday night into Saturday morning open lines. And welcome back. Cheryl Jones with us, our final segment. Cheryl, you heard that tiger in that commercial. And Tom, our producer for Beyond Belief, is thinking about bringing a live tiger on the set to do a story. Fat chance that's going to happen with me in there. My God. Would you go into a studio with a live tiger?
Not unless there was some separation between us. Now, I will admit that earlier in my career, once upon a time, when I worked at the Weather Channel and I was doing a series on animals and weather and all of that and went to an exotic animal preserve, and I did get very close to a tiger. I was assured it was safe. In retrospect, I'm more cautious now than I was then. I probably wouldn't do what I did then. I was, you know, nothing happened. But I'm not one to take those kinds of chances anymore.
Think Siegfried and Roy.
Right, absolutely.
You know what? Let's go to the phones again. West of the Rockies, Steve in Casa Grande, Arizona. Now, there's only one Steve I know in Casa Grande, Arizona, and he's an Elvis impersonator. Could this be you, Steve?
That is me. That's me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. All right, well, I got a song for you here. Are you ready?
All right.
Can't walk out. Coronavirus too much, baby. We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out. Coronavirus too much, baby.
Well, that's an interesting little song, a little tidbit there, Cheryl.
Yeah, nothing like being serenaded at this hour. Thank you.
I was at an event where I met him, and, you know, he was in costume, and he looks like Elvis,
uh-huh.
and he sings like Elvis and everything else, and he just put together that little coronavirus song, which is intriguing.
Yes, we needed that. That's an inspiration.
Look, I feel so sorry for the people who have died, for the family members who have lost people. It's pacing a little higher now than the seasonal flu, but I got to tell you, if it is discovered, as I believe, this was concocted in a laboratory in Wuhan, China, and I honestly believe it escaped accidentally. But the point is, why in God's name are we making biologicals like this for warfare? For what? What's wrong with humanity when they do these things?
I don't understand it either. I mean, this effort to increase the intensity, you know, the gain of function is what it's called, in the vaccines is incredible. Why would you want to do that and then have to try to develop a vaccine to take care of what you've just developed? It makes no sense to me. I'm not an expert in that field at all. But if you don't have a problem, why create it?
Yep, absolutely. So you got a couple assignments to try to get a hold of Anthony Fauci and also Ted Turner.
Okay, all right? Good luck with that. Okay.
I give you really easy things to do.
Really easy ones. I wonder if they have any paranormal experiences they'd like to relate to us.
Let's go to Queens, New York. Mickey's with us. Hi, Mickey. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. Good morning or good evening. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. How are you?
Oh, I lost my uncle 2 weeks ago, and my brother died yesterday.
Oh, and from Corona? I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
Mickey, let me ask you something. Did they have any prior conditions, anything else that was wrong with them?
Well, my brother, I still haven't been given the cause of death. I was told to find out. He had diabetes and a heart problem.
Okay, and how about your uncle?
My uncle was 92, and it seemed that the home healthcare people brought it to him, the home attendant. We don't know who brought it, but someone brought it into the house.
Okay. Well, you're on with Cheryl. Go ahead.
Okay. Cheryl, I'm with you, and I really love what you're saying, and I hope that they will free the alternate treatments. And, okay, my question, I have a comment. I don't know if it was you or Lynn who mentioned the first encounter at the age of 5. And my other question is, I learned the repulsion to the reptiles from my mother, and I grew up in the tropics in Dominican Republic with tarantulas and snakes.
Ugh.
And I will see them almost every day. Any connection with the Adam and Eve and the snake with the reptile thing? Because that's my question. But I used to have a bracelet with a snake, and my mother, she wanted to throw it away. So I want you to tell me if there's any connection with the reptiles being related to it.
All right, interesting take. What do you think of that? The possibility that the reptilians might have been tied into the Adam and Eve episode of the snake in the garden, and, you know, who knows? The devil could have been a reptilian.
We just don't know. I mean, with all of the information that we know, and then what we see from ancient aliens to the past, it seems like it's never ending in terms of the things that come up and that are possible. So who knows where it all began, you know, and the process that it went through, and if that does have any connection. That was a according to the abstract and the laboratory report, which again is linked up on through Terry Lynn Keel's name, and I believe the website is hooked up through there, and you can find those images of the abstract and also other parts of the story with the alien and the a rendition of the biological healing tool. But that was a Tegu lizard, Tegu Salvatore lizard, and according to the abstract, it says that the family was a possible distant evolutionary relative of the humanoid reptilian, but we don't know where it came from, if it came from underground, undersea, somewhere else in our solar system, another planet, whatever. But given the fact that that trait was specific to a human gene that was found in this one, this is a very, very amazing story, George. And who knows what it's linked to evolutionary-wise. So I don't know.
All right, we got a text and tweet for you, Cheryl. Tom's got it. What do you have, Tommy?
Sure do. This one from Janie in West Covina, California. Please have Cheryl talk about why there are so many species of ETs and bad ETs versus good ETs.
Ooh, why there's so many species of bad and good. Again, I'm not an expert, but...
It's like us.
This is a question that comes up a lot, and especially in this story where this is a... called a humanoid reptilian. And as many people know, a reptilian, the reptilian species, has often been portrayed as a negative, with a negative image. I mean, some people are familiar with the David Icke book on Children of the Matrix, where the reptilians were portrayed in a negative light. There's also the... TV miniseries, The V.
Oh, yeah, that was not friendly.
You're right, not friendly. So overall, the reptilian does have that image. However, like in the human species, we have good humans and we have bad humans, and we have good and bad in everything, I think. And again, I'm not an expert, but... and I can't answer this really with any real knowledge or wisdom, but just to say that with this story tonight, this was obviously a positive, even though it was shocking to Terry Lynn Keel and the first time ever for this kind of a test to be conducted in a forensic lab, or that first time ever that Lynn Mann, the chief lab analyst, had ever heard of anything like this. And to our knowledge, it's never been done. You know, we have to just go with what we have. I'm just a reporter in this sense. I just bring you the story and the information as I have it. It's for you to make up your own mind. And I believe Terry and Lynn, the two people I interviewed this evening on this story, were probably just as perplexed as the rest of us over this. So I think it's just something, a window or a door that's opened up to another really incredible avenue of research that is possible. And let's hope that somebody takes it and runs with it, like Lynn Mann had suggested. We don't know where it goes. We don't know where this goes, but this was strange, first ever, bigger than the Betty Hill dress analysis, because her dress really did not have any identifiable DNA. And this was identifiable. I found the process that Lynn Mann went through to track down mm-hmm. a species that had the human gene just fascinating. I mean, what a journey, what a search, and what a find.
Anthropologists should love this story.
Right. It'll be interesting to see where this story goes, because I believe this is epic and groundbreaking and historically significant.
Off to Tampa, Florida we go now. Hi, Alan. You're on with Cheryl Jones.
Hi, Cheryl. Where was that DNA swab taken from on that young lady?
It was taken from near the area of pain inside her body. And for more details, you would really need to get her book. She has an e-book that's on her site, and she goes into all the details there.
And When did the episode occur?
That occurred in 2012. The healing with the alien visitation, the reptilian visitation, was 2012. She had surgeries in 2000 that did not turn out well and were very problematic and continued to cause her extreme chronic pain. And so this happened 12 years after that.
Are strange things still occurring to her?
She does have things happen from time to time, yes, and has for much of her life, but never anything like this. She does have, she is a person who does have encounters and does have a lot of interesting things happen to her, and she writes about those.
Let's go to Joe in Long Island, New York. Joseph, go ahead.
Cheryl, you say you're starting out on a hike in a national park. The weather is perfect. Conditions are perfect. Then you have strong intuition. Turn around, abandon the hike. Do you follow that intuition or do you just proceed? What do you do?
I try to follow my intuition much more than I used to.
Go with the gut.
Yes. A sense, and you know, a feeling, a gut feeling. Yes, I think you definitely should listen to that.
There's nothing like the gut because I think it has great instincts, and also it gives you that clairvoyancy I think you need in a lot of times, Cheryl.
Exactly. And, boy, we've never needed that more than we need it now. So I think in some sense, though, George, the situation we're in with the virus is causing people to open their eyes a lot wider than ever before. I really do believe there's some good coming out of it. You know, it's we can't change the situation that we're in now, but we possibly can change what happens to us in the future and how we react to it.
Well, you know what it does show you, too, is people actually need people to be around.
Yes, and I am concerned about the social distancing to carry on for so long because that is a, you know, that's a military technique with distancing people. And you also realize, too, or some people do, that if you are grouped together, the surveillance doesn't work as well when you're grouped.
That's
you're
right.
Separated by a certain distance for the surveillance to work. Now, I would hate to think that that is actually a permanent situation that we're going in.
It's just a strange situation all along, Cheryl, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And that's really the perplexing thing. There's so many oddities that are kind of red flags.
They sure are. Cheryl, give out your website.
CherylJones.com. That's CherylJones.com. And you can email me from that. And I am getting emails from the alien DNA story.
Super. Oh, yeah. You're going to get them all day and all morning and the next day and everything else. Cheryl, we'll talk to you the end of May, okay?
Okay, great. We'll see you then. And thanks, everybody, for calling.
Have yourself a very safe Memorial Day weekend when that happens. My gosh. Another month. And don't forget Mother's Day, folks, to all of your mothers on May 10th, which is going to come up in about less than 2 weeks as well. So, stick with us tomorrow night. We'll have some great programs for you in those special open lines. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Banal, Ian Punnett, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.